Friends, I just did my annual economic briefing with author and Swiss America chairman Craig R. Smith, and what I discovered confirms my worst fears. Something is getting ready to happen that's going to change the course of world history, and not one in a thousand will believe it until it's already too late, and I don't want that to be you. After writing four important books accurately predicting the future of gold, oil, the dollar, and inflation, Mr. Smith is on the verge of releasing his next book, and this new CD covers the root issue of the coming crisis and offers three critical steps to protect your family from the fallout. Please call today for this hot new CD, The Future of Money. Toll free, 888-559-9920, 888-559-9920. You've got to hear The Future of Money to believe it. 888-559-9920. 888-559-9920. Do it today.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created Webseed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WEBSEED.com.
Raw Nation's Hot Rocks is the only raw, vegan, certified organic vitamin for your sex drive. Hot Rocks is made using only the purest organic superfoods and herbs in their raw, unaltered state. We've created this synergistic blend of powerful herbs that intensifies sexual energy and performance in both men and women. It's like an overall vitality pill that makes you feel amazing. There's absolutely no chemicals, pesticides, or harsh stimulants in Hot Rocks. If you already have a strong sex drive, Hot Rocks will help you maintain it and keep it from slipping away. The problem that affects even the healthiest people nowadays because of the amount of toxicity that we are all exposed to. So what are you waiting for? We offer a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can order Hot Rocks risk-free. It's time to experience pure bliss and the only truly healthy libido enhancer on the market, Hot Rocks. Order online at hotrocks.com. That's HOTRAWKS.com. Or call us 855-RAW-LIFE. That's 855-729-5433.
Hey, mister, that's a mighty big dog you got there.
Help me, Jesus! Help me, Jewish God! Help me, Allah! Tom Cruise.
It's Linderman Unleashed on Natural News Radio.
You tell him I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
All opinions and views expressed on Linderman Unleashed are strictly those of the host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Natural News Radio. Warning, this program might cause you to think for yourself. Listener discretion is advised. And now, here's your host, Kurt Linderman.
That's right, you are listening to Linderman Unleashed. I'm your host, Kurt Linderman Sr. Going to be flying solo today. My lovely wife and co-host Kimberly is not in the studio. We're going to be bringing you the bare-knuckled right hook of truth to any that would try to put the chokehold on your liberty and health freedom. Got a special guest today, as promised, as I told you on Friday, Mr. Liam Sheff, author of the book Official Stories, a friend of mine, just, I guess you could say, conspiracy realist extraordinaire. Liam, welcome to Linderman Unleashed.
Kurt, thanks for having me back on.
Hey, man, I really appreciate it. I've been reading your book, and now the last time you were on the program, I kind of had to skim through it real quick and get what I wanted to talk about. Been reading the book. It's an absolutely amazing book. I just wanted to let you know on the air, the only reason I haven't written the review yet for Amazon.
I know, the check. I told you, I'm sending you one.
All right, you know, because, you know, baby needs new shoes. No, I'm finishing the book. And as soon as I finish the book and I can give an you know, absolute truthful rendition of what I thought, I'm going to get that done for you, I promise. But, Liam, the reason that I called you up and wanted to get you on the program today is two things. One of the things is we have this big international AIDS conference going on right now where all the pomp and everything is going on. And it just seems absolutely amazing to me that nobody is getting this. And I kind of wanted to get back into the whole AIDS debacle, the lie that's going on and why it's being perpetrated. So in a chapter of your book, you talk about it. So I thought it'd be a great way to let the audience know exactly what's going on with this whole AIDS thing.
Well, AIDS is caused by a lie that they tell you. AIDS is caused by a virus in the form of a lie, and they tell you the lie, and then you go and take their drugs, and very often you get sick. Or you're in a community like the gay community. The gay male community. Notice it's not lesbians coming down with illness.
Right.
The gay male community, which I'm sympathetic with, by the way. You know, I don't hold anything against anybody. I don't really care what adults do. But that lives in ghettoized, isolated communities and does a ton of drugs. And they, you know, the young fast lane guys do a ton of drugs. And they butcher their intestines. And they put very toxic things into their colons for lubrication. And they get sick. They get sick over time. So we've been saddled with this, you know, idea that there's a mystery ailment, you know, that there's no reason that young gay men in the 70s or 80s were getting sick. Well, there were plenty of reasons. They were taking antibiotics by the handful. They were taking them daily for years. Now, parents of vaccine-injured children know that you have a small child and you give them a vaccine once or twice and you can radically alter their health, and it's a terrible thing. People know that on antibiotics they can get chronic fatigue syndrome. They can perforate their gut and get these fibromyalgia type, these lupus, these strange illnesses, these inflammatory illnesses. Well, this is what happened in the gay community. It's not any different, except they were isolated. They were living in Chelsea and East Village. They were, you know, they were living in very filthy pockets of American cities because, frankly, you know, they're not really allowed. They're not really permitted, you know, especially in the 60s, 70s. You're not permitted to be at home. Mom cries when she finds out you're gay. Dad throws you out, says you're not my son anymore. And your heart's broken, so you run to these cities and you're among young men. Now, the reason it didn't happen to young women is because women don't have something that men have, or they do have something that men don't have. The thing they don't have is testosterone, and testosterone makes men into pigs, into swine. It makes us into swine. I'm speaking for myself, of course, but also all other men who are being honest know that we, from 17, 16, 15 to 25, 6, 7, 8, think about sex almost constantly.
Well, and I'll tell you, Liam, I think that goes right on. I just turned 47 and I'm still doing pretty good about that.
Well,
and you know, that's the one thing. When I saw your presentation at the Health Freedom Expo, you were really talking about it, and it really made sense to me that the one thing that gay men are lacking, that a heterosexual relationship doesn't lack, is a woman, and the woman is the one that kind of puts you in check, and we need to be put in check at times.
Oh, God. Yes. I mean, look, women are crazy in their own special variety of ways. Everybody is. I'll tell you, and I'll tell the audience, I think homosexuality is a natural occurrence in the human species, but it comes with its own perils. And the peril is that there isn't, especially in the young version of males, there isn't a balancing partner. The thing about, and I write this in the book, the thing about a man with a woman goes, hey, baby, what's your, you know, why don't we go down to the, you know, my van here and I have a mattress. And she goes, you're disgusting.
Yeah.
You're disgusting. Get away from me. So you have to go, okay, what's your name again? Oh, yeah. What do you like to do? Oh, yeah. Oh, you want to talk about feelings? Oh, okay. So, you know, we grow as people. I grew up with, you know, more or less with women, and I think I was surrounded by that emotional context from a very early age, and that suited me. I was fine with that, but I still learned a lot in my adult relationships with my female friends. Now, men get, I think, if we grow emotionally, spiritually, we get better as we get older. But young men go up to each other and go, "Hey, do you want to have?" And before they finish the sentence, they've had it. They've done it. And you can end up doing it 40 times in a night. And in order to do that, because you physically can make yourself do that as a young man, you're all testosterone, you're all excitement and adventure. And if you're a man who's attracted to men and you're a young man and you're in the cities and these clubs, you're going to take all of the antibiotics you need to take because you're going to have about 3 or 4 STDs at every moment. Gonorrhea, a couple forms of chlamydia, you know, you're just going to have something going on.
Right.
It's normal. You're going to have bowel parasites if you're a receptive partner, so you're going to be putting things in there that are toxic in your colon. You're going to be perforating your colon layer. It's well sort of understood in the gay community that the receptive partner is supposed to use very powerful douching agents, like really shower attachments to wash out their intestinal lining, to wash out the lining of their colon, I should say, so that they're more sanitary. But, of course, doing this, they're just – I mean, it's like washing the mucus out of your body. That's protecting your whole intestine. Well, they wash it out of their colon, they perforate it, and they bleed feces into their bloodstream. So, well, you know, what was AIDS in the 70s? It was a lot of things. But it wasn't a mysterious, you know, wily retrovirus that can't be tested for. It was long-term toxicological assault.
Well, and then what we've got here is we've got – let's talk – what was the name of the child that was big in the 80s? He ended up dying from Indiana.
Yeah.
Was it Adam?
No, it was Ryan White.
Ryan White, exactly. Now, he didn't have homosexual relationships and everything.
No,
people are saying, what's going on?
He was a hemophiliac.
Right.
He couldn't produce blood. So they have this new drug at that point. It's called AZT. Well, it's not a new drug. It's a recycled cancer chemotherapy drug. But AZT is the drug. And it does the amazing thing of stopping cellular production at the level – and it kills the liver very quickly, but it impacts the bone marrow, and it stops the production of red blood cells. Did I mention the kid was a hemophiliac? You know, couldn't
yes, you
stop
did.
Bleeding, had great blood irregularities. So there you are, stops producing blood, boy dies, everybody says, oh, AIDS is real, infectious disease.
So was Ryan White basically a lamb led to the slaughter to further the lie of AIDS? What?
Arthur Ashe, tennis player, they gave him the drug, the same drug. Keith Haring, artist, they gave him an analog drug to AZT called, I think, DDL. He died in a week. He was dead, according to sources, inside the community, died in a week on DDL. Freddie Mercury, AZT. You know, find the big celebrities who died of AIDS-related diseases. They took AZT. They took AIDS drugs, died very, very quickly because the drugs are still toxic. They're very toxic. But the doses were so high they'd kill people in about a week to a couple, like 6 weeks. 150,000 gay men died taking these drugs. And the gay community still, with its head deep in the sand, says, you know, fund the AIDS conference. Because they get huge political cachet out of it. You know, it's just a political gold mine at this point.
And it's determining foreign policy. And I think that was the original goal. And the other thing it's doing is we're taking even more control over Africa. And there's a big reason for that, because if the Africans over there really knew what their country was worth or what their continent was worth, they would run every white person out of there that wasn't born there and take over and probably be the wealthiest continent on the planet. And this is all politically driven. And it's also, I believe, a puritanical way of saying, okay, y'all aren't believing in God anymore, so we got to give you something else to scare the crap out of you to stop what you're doing.
I think that was all brilliantly said. The African idea was that Africans who have been forced into physical bondage, chattel slavery, been murdered by the tens of thousands in public in their various countries of the Congo, South Africa, etc., Uganda, by CIA and SIS, which is UK intelligence services, like Idi Amin, who was sponsored by the UK intelligence, who was another just an insane dictator, to the Dutch apartheid government, which just killed black Africans at will and murdered them and tortured them. You know, they said, well, I guess we can't do that anymore. But now, for some reason, all you blacks, or you bleks, have a fatal sex disease. Somehow all the whites were immune, but all the bleks have a fatal sex disease. Turns out that they didn't. They just have what they always had. They have a lack of resources, lack of clean water. And if you don't have clean water, you have diarrhea, you have infectious diarrhea, you can get sepsis, essentially be passing along. Then you have malaria and tuberculosis around, and the death rate is very high. And that's what they saw. That's what the white coats, you know, the lab coats saw when they went over. They knew it. They knew it before, but they said, well, maybe it's like what's happening in the gay community in America. Why would that be? It wouldn't.
Right.
They just made it up. But
it was a license to kill.
Yeah. And they used those pre-existing biases. Oh, gay people are saying, oh, there's something wrong there. Oh, well, we don't know about those dark Africans. They must be practicing some weird thing. Well, it turns out most of them are more conservative in their sexual practices than anybody applying for, grad school at Berkeley.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, we're going to talk about the actual AIDS test as soon as we get back from break. I want to thank you again for being on the program, Liam. We're going to be here. Liam's going to come back for the second segment. You're listening to Linderman Unleashed, naturalnewsradio.com.
Are you concerned about the food supply, including GMOs in your family's diet? With pesticides, herbicides, and questionable additives like MSG, high fructose corn syrup, aspartame, and food dyes in most foods on the market today, you should be. Well, now there's an affordable alternative to high retail organic food prices. Announcing Box Organics, created by two families with children affected by autism that were not only concerned with the toxic ingredients in our conventional diets, but equally concerned with the high cost of providing their family nutritious organic foods. Box Organics offers USDA certified organic fruit, vegetables, dairy, dry goods, and meats delivered fresh, not frozen, directly to your door. We're an online store offering you substantial savings on the organic food that you want at your convenience. Ordering is easy. Box Organics currently offers free shipping in 15 states with a minimum purchase. Visit boxorganics.com. That's organics with an X.com today. Box Organics. Think and eat outside the box.
Hey Obama, the Lindermans refuse to lower their standards, so up yours. And now, back to Linderman Unleashed.
Two flags fly above my land and really sum up how I feel. One is the colors that fly high and proud, the red, the white, the blue. The other one's got a rattlesnake with a simple statement made. Don't tread on me is what it says, and I'll take that to my grave.
That's right. Welcome back to Linderman Unleashed. Still here with our special guest, Liam Sheff, author of the book Official Stories. Liam, in the back of your book, you've got some, well, they're quotes from real high up scientists that are studying HIV. And it's amazing because your first quote is dated 1988. The last quote is 2009. And it looks like absolutely nothing has changed. It's like, where is AIDS? What is it? And how does it destroy T cells? And they all basically say, like you say in your book, we're still not really sure. More research needs to be done. Send money. Nothing's changed.
Keep sending money. The details of HIV pathogenesis, how HIV kills people, are still being worked out. How HIV depletes T cells, so an individual advances to AIDS. That last one was John P. Moore of Weill Cornell Medical Center. He's the founder of AIDS Truth. In other words, anybody who says that AIDS isn't caused by or AIDS is multifactorial, he says is an AIDS denialist akin to a Holocaust denialist. But he says, the details of HIV pathogenesis, how HIV kills people, are still being worked out. But don't ask any questions.
Yeah. AIDS Truth. What's the truth about AIDS? Well, we still don't know. Send more money. Wait a minute. You're the founder of AIDS Truth. Where's the truth? It's ridiculous. Now, yeah. Let's talk about the AIDS test. In your book, and I had no idea about this until I started reading your book, there are so many things that can cause a positive AIDS test, because really they're looking at antibodies. They're not even looking at, there's no virus. There's never been a virus isolated. There's no such thing as a human immunodeficiency virus. So they look at things that are going on in the body, which can, pregnancy can cause it. That recent vaccinations can cause it, all kinds of things. What in the hell is going on? If you're sick, if you recently had the flu, you can come up positive. And then what's the next thing they do? Put you on the drugs and then make you look like an AIDS patient.
Yeah, you said that perfectly. I mean, there really is no such thing as a human immunodeficiency virus. There's no virus that causes human immunodeficiency. And what they measure in these cells are just generally proteins. And generally, they're all non-specific proteins. So the proteins all come from all these other illnesses or non-illnesses, like pregnancy, that you can have, and then the tests ping on. And again, they just decided, the same way they did with polio, it's easier to blame anything that's invisible, that you have to have the experts to tell you that's there, instead of blaming industry, toxicological exposure, chemicals, etc. Because individuals can be responsible for, we can fight industry, or we could ask industry to do things differently. We can be responsible personally for the toxins that we put into our body, or we can ask industry not to put them into our food or our, you know, care products, beauty products. And yet, if we do this, we affect the bottom line for a lot of companies. So doing that is exactly what they don't want. So they say, oh, no, don't worry about that. It's an invisible thing. Only we can measure it. Sure, our tests aren't validated. Sure, they're nonspecific, but you have to trust us. And if you don't trust us, you're a Holocaust denialist. And that's the line. That's where they go with it.
It's the global warming of disease, I guess. It's just believe it, and if you don't, shame on you. Now, we were talking earlier about Ryan White. Now, my belief is that was turning into a little bit of a problem for the AIDS researchers out there. Hey, these kids aren't doing drugs. These kids aren't, having unprotected anal sex and homosexual sex and everything else. So we got to stop pushing this AIDS theory on the kids. So what do? Well, in just recent years, they've come out with this new disease called primary immunodeficiency for the kids. They're basically like the kids that are vaccine injured, little AIDS patients, I guess, for lack of a better term. Have you done anything looking at how that's kind of changed over the years, where they've kind of gotten away from diagnosing the kids with AIDS?
Well, they give that to white kids. That's what they give to the little suburban white kids who are over vaccinated, over drugged. They have white flour, they have sugar in every single thing that they eat, and they're eating Pop-Tarts for breakfast. We thought it was a joke, like, oh, Pop-Tarts for breakfast, you know, candy, cake for breakfast. But it's not even candy or cake. It's
right.
Really milled poison, denatured food. So kids grow up, they eat this stuff, they eat Trix, they get a vaccine here and there. Maybe they don't get into the autism spectrum, but they're not doing great. They're not doing well, and they're just constantly sick. I was very often inexplicably sick. Well, it was explicable. I was eating sugar, but why are you sick? They never said, oh, you're eating a ton of sugar. That's why you have strep all the time. Or you can't digest milk. I really can't. And I had chronic, immense stomach aches, just, you know, kind of ripping through my body, stomach aches. And nobody ever said, what are you eating? What are you feeding the kid? Nobody ever said that. So what they can give to the brown-skinned kids in the ghetto is, oh, your mother is, you're HIV positive. They'll just test them without anybody's permission. And they'll test the mothers. And even though they know the mother's antibodies cause the test to be positive, and, you know, it's all fake. But that's, they can do that to some people. But to the white suburban kids, oh, my, I'm so worried about my, you know, even sort of trailer level existence, they don't tend to go for the AIDS diagnosis outside of, I would say, predefined communities. Again, African descent or gay men. They don't tend to do that because it would ring too many alarm bells. You know, they don't want to accuse all of the, it's a very eugenic form of thought. It's tracing these old population lines. They don't want to accuse, forgive me, but all the so-called Caucasian white people of being sexually infected, but we can have mysterious chronic illness. We can have Crohn's and fibromyalgia and lupus, inexplicable chronic illness, not really different than what AIDS patients very often have. Cancer patients have what AIDS patients have. Every cancer patient on chemotherapy is an AIDS patient. AIDS patients just stay on the drugs for a lot longer. The drugs are maybe dosed a little bit differently, but it's the same process. So the PIDs, right? What do they call it? Pediatric immunodeficiency? Yeah.
Primary immunodeficiency.
Primary. Please. I mean, they might as well put that on the box of Pop-Tarts. This will cause primary immunodeficiency.
Well, they've got all these commercials now. When I grow up, I want to be a rock star. When I grow up, I want to be whatever. And it's all these kids that are, you know, the Adam whatever foundation. And it's we don't know exactly what it is. Send money.
Yeah, we have no idea. Send money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we'll come up with a vaccine for it, even though it's caused by the lead in the paint, the asbestos in the buildings and cities. Or, again, you can't. People joke about sugar. People, you know, William Duffy wrote the book in the 50s, I guess, Sugar Blues, about how many ways this affects your mind and body. And it was sort of, it was kind of a hip thing to realize, but it was still sort of too out there. You know, it was almost, what were the guys who would read poetry and snap their fingers? They were the beat poets.
Yeah, the beatniks.
Yeah, the beatniks. It was almost a beatnik thing. Like, man, I'm quitting sugar, man. It's the devil's, you know, it's the devil's table condiment, man. And it was just too out there, and people sort of ridiculed, oh, don't eat white sugar. Oh, you're being an extremist. Well, we've only been eating white sugar for a very short period of time as a human civilization, and only in the amounts that we've had it in, like by the bushel full, where you could go buy 5 pounds for less, you know, a dollar or two. This was a very expensive commodity that you would use in very, 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 very sparingly. Through the, I want to say, late Victorian age. But now we use it all the time, and it is a bodily poison. It will immediately feed candida in yeast. It will immediately suppress your immune system, spike your insulin, you know, drive down, deplete serotonin. It does everything that you don't want it to do. Sucks B vitamins out of your body, acidizes your body. It's a terrible, terrible thing to be eating, and I ate it. I ate raw sugar. I mean, I ate sugar cubes because my grandmother said, oh, have a sugar cube. So I'd eat a ton of them.
Oh, my God.
And then I'd run around like a hummingbird. And then I would like crash to the ground and like scream and wail, I'm not happy. I'm not happy. Nobody said, maybe it's what you're feeding him.
Give him more sugar. He's not happy.
Well, that's what I ended up doing. I ended up self-medicating for a while. Like, I need more. I was a sugar addict by like 11.
Wow.
It was a mess.
I never ate sugar as a kid. I would eat cornflakes even, and I would never, I to this day, I don't put sugar on anything. Absolutely nothing.
Well,
never have.
No, I reformed, believe me, I reformed. But it was hard. It was very hard to quit. Not as hard as heroin, but I got to tell you, it's hard. Not that I would know, I wouldn't. But it's hard to quit because your body gets accustomed and trained to these even very destructive chemical reactions in order to regulate mood. However you're filling the bucket, you want, your body tells you to fill it. So you have to go and read and like, okay, do this, take chromium, do this, don't eat that. But I want to. Well, don't. I had to like find a better version of everything that I was used to eating. You know, there was a period in my teens where I think if I could have, the only thing I would have eaten was breakfast cereal, sugary breakfast cereal.
Oh, yeah. I talked about that on Thursday's program. I've got daughters. That's all they want to eat.
Ugh.
It's just I'm just out of my mind. I've decided, you know, we'll give them, it's supposed to be like a little treat, and they're supposed to have it sparingly. And the next thing you know, and we got organic milk and, you know, the whole nine yards. And then they pour that organic milk on friggin' breakfast cereal. And it's driving me nuts. And I just decided I'm not buying it anymore.
Yeah,
You're not getting it.
Right. No, switch to oats, switch to rolled oats and put some raisins in it. And, you know, the body starts to feel better because the thing with this quick sugar thing is you want it. You think you really, 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 really need it. But what you need is to regulate your sugar, and you're doing it by spiking your insulin again. So it's to get away from that. Anyway, kids are like, you know, like hummingbirds, and they have the fast metabolism. But you hit the wall at like 20, you know, in the early 20s, you start, something's not working right. And it also disorganizes your thought patterns. It's not good for development to have such scattered thought patterns. So, yes, PIDs, primary. It's not primary. It's induced.
Right.
Procter & Gamble immunodeficiency.
That's a good one. You know, and that's what I'm seeing is we're seeing all this, the what you were talking about with the antibiotics within the gay community, which was causing the AIDS. We're seeing that in the autism community, because what happened when they got, when the kids got vaccine injured, they started getting sick. Moms took them to the doctor, and I can attest to this personally because my wife and I did the same thing, taking him to the doctor. What's wrong with him? He has these ear infections. He has all this diarrhea. What's going on? Give him more antibiotics. And the next thing you know, they're turning our kids into what they refer to as AIDS patients, and it's driving me out of my mind that people aren't seeing it. But they're falling for the initial lie of AIDS. So how are they going to see that?
I just think you're just nailing it. This is exactly what they're doing. And I'm really glad that you brought – you can get a little bored in my position talking about the AIDS thing because, okay, well, it doesn't affect everybody. No, this is exactly what they've done. It is not different than what they've done to everybody. With some people, they call it a sex disease. With some people, they call it a mystery. It's a mystery what's happening to these children. With some people, they call it another kind of mystery, the PIDs. The autism is a mystery. The PIDs is a mystery. No, it's all the toxicological, environmental, nutritional, or anti-nutritional assault, as my friend Robert Scott Bell and yours says. It is an actual assault. It really is a violent cellular depletion and assault. So that is what we're living in, and that's what people are seeing. And to turn that around, you kind of got to do the opposite. You got to do a lot of research and a lot of reading, and choose that diet. I chose a macrobiotic path, which I've adjusted to my own tastes. People choose the primal thing. You got to start doing the research and going deep into it. But you got to walk away from the Walgreens food aisle. Walk away.
Right. There's no doubt about that. That's exactly what's going on. We are killing ourselves. We're allowing ourselves to be poisoned on an almost minute-to-minute basis in this society. And then what do we do? We run to the very industries that are poisoning us and say, I feel terrible, help me.
I think that's what
the AIDS community is doing.
Yeah, well, the AIDS community. The AIDS community are a bunch. Number one, I just know behind the – and I know we're going to hit a break, but behind the wall are the eugenicists, the controllers of nations going, they're still going for it. Yeah, we need to get – what you said about Africa was so true. I don't think I've ever heard it said better. If Africans knew and could do something about the reality, which is that they essentially live on the most valuable continent on Earth for precious metals, for, unfortunately, things I'm not a big fan of, uranium, these sorts of things.
Right.
Oil, all the other resources that we still need in the world because we're not really being clever about energy. They'd essentially be running the casinos and we'd be coming in the suckers to bet. But
exactly.
But they don't have the guns. They don't have the international support. And anytime somebody tries to rise up and form a coalition, they somehow disappear.
Yeah, exactly. They don't have the international bankers backing them up. We're going to have to take another quick break. Liam has graciously accepted my request to stay on for the last segment of today's program. We're going to be right back. You're listening to Linderman Unleashed on naturalnewsradio.com.
Friends, I just did my annual economic briefing with author and Swiss America chairman Craig R. Smith, and what I discovered confirms my worst fears. Something is getting ready to happen that's going to change the course of world history, and not one in 1,000 will believe it until it's already too late, and I don't want that to be you. After writing 4 important books accurately predicting the future of gold, oil, the dollar, and inflation, Mr. Smith is on the verge of releasing his next book, and this new CD covers the root issue of the coming crisis and offers 3 critical steps to protect your family from the fallout. Please call today for this hot new CD, The Future of Money. Toll free, 888-559-9920, 888-559-9920. You've got to hear The Future of Money to believe it. 888-559-9920, 888-559-9920. Do it today.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Raw Nation's Hot Rocks is the only raw, vegan, certified organic vitamin for your sex drive. Hot Rocks is made using only the purest organic superfoods and herbs in their raw, unaltered state. We've created this synergistic blend of powerful herbs that intensifies sexual energy and performance in both men and women. It's like an overall vitality pill that makes you feel amazing. There's absolutely no chemicals, pesticides, or harsh stimulants in Hot Rocks. If you already have a strong sex drive, Hot Rocks will help you maintain it and keep it from slipping away. The problem that affects even the healthiest people nowadays because of the amount of toxicity that we are all exposed to. So what are you waiting for? We offer a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can order Hot Rocks risk-free. It's time to experience pure bliss and the only truly healthy libido enhancer on the market, Hot Rocks. Order online at hotrocks.com. That's HOTRAWKS.com. Or call us 855-RAW-LIFE. That's 855-729-5433.
Hey, Doc, why don't you listen to Linderman Unleashed?
You can't handle the truth.
That's right. Welcome back to the second or to the third segment, the final segment of Linderman Unleashed, still with Liam Sheff, author of the book Official Stories. Liam, I wanted to talk about this whole idea of Vera, this whole story of Vera, Janny Scott, this reporter, what was going on. You're not just the author of this book, Official Stories. You have been an investigative journalist. You got involved in this, and explain a little bit, as briefly as you can, to get onto other subjects, what was going on in Vera, because that's kind of the epitome of what I see here in America, of what the AIDS groups are doing. I mean, it's literally murder. It's genocide.
Oh, wow. This story. There was an orphanage in New York City called Incarnation Children's Center. It's where abandoned babies from mothers who got addicted to crack cocaine, the babies would be taken into this place. The babies were very damaged from being exposed to cocaine in utero, and they were born addicted to it, so they'd have to come off of crack addiction. So they'd be laying there, you know, infants wailing. And they were brought into this orphanage, and they were cared for, and a lot of them recovered to a very reasonable degree. Well, when the HIV thing came along, they decided that all these crack addict mothers were in fact HIV infected, because the test comes up positive for everything, and this is the population you test. So they weren't just crack addicts anymore, they were HIV. In other words, you could kill them at this point.
Right.
So the babies were taken, so the babies were also considered HIV positive. They weren't just the children of crack addicts who needed a lot of help, they were... Then the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, decided that this orphan population was a great population to test drugs on. That's right. Crack addicted, newborn, infants, great population to test high dose, black box labeled chemotherapy drugs on. And that's what they did. And they started doing that in the 90s in New York City, in Washington Heights, in the Dominican neighborhood above Harlem, full of immigrants, a lot of illegal immigrants, very poor people. A lot of people living in government housing or in subsidized housing, which you would not want to live in. It's a nightmare, you know. Then the city of New York, which is just one giant floating asylum, granted asylum, decided that mothers who weren't enforcing the AIDS drug regimen in their small children, whose children didn't want to take the black box labeled chemotherapy, bone marrow suppressing, Ryan White killing drugs, because they made them feel very sick, were not complying with medical law, and the children would be seized from homes, and this happened over and over again. So Incarnation Children's Center became sort of a little prison for children who had been seized for non-drug compliance. Then it gets better. They would actually force drug the children. They would put a tube, a plastic tube called a nasogastric tube, up their nose, down their throat, and they would grind up the pills. And the women they hired, who were these Dominican, they were hired as child care workers. They were just mothers from the neighborhood. And I know what I'm talking about because I knew them, and I interviewed them. And those interviews are written down and recorded and in the press. But the mothers would they were considered child care workers, grind up the stuff in a mortar and pestle, these toxic drugs, and push it through up the nose, up a tube, and down in the stomach. And the kids would throw up and vomit and have diarrhea all the time, and then get sick, and then get terrible diseases that were totally predictable and dependent on the drugs, like deformations and body fat and growth and all the things that the drugs cause. Some kids had blindness occurring from strokes that they had immediately within weeks of starting the drugs. They'd never been on the drugs. They had strokes after starting the drugs, and a couple of them went blind, or one girl did, and then a couple of the kids who had strokes died. And kids didn't want to take the drugs. And when they continued to refuse, they would get a puncture cut through their abdomen, and another plastic tube would be sewn in. A button, what was called a button, would be put on the outside. And I got to see some of these, So you saw kids, and they had a plastic hole. They had a hole cut through their abdomen with a plastic stopper put through it. So if they refused drugs, because they were refusing, the drugs would be pumped with a pumping with a syringe that would be pumped through a tube, and then they would even get food pumped in with a pumping machine. Not food, but Pediasure. So this is hell on earth. This is now hell on earth. This is unbelievable Nazi torture. And it's all real, and you can look up, you know, PEG tube, and you'll see what I'm talking about. And you can actually find the medical studies that says this is a good thing to do to children. I didn't make any of it up. I never wanted to know about this kind of stuff, but I was investigating it, and I unfortunately had to realize it was true. So that's what they were doing up there, and they were getting funded by tax money. And I blew the whistle hard. I got two mothers. One is an ex-nurse. One was a mother who had a couple kids taken there. I talked to people who never made it into the story, but I talked to a lot of people. I ended up talking to five or six child care workers, a nurse from the two nurses from the place. I got an interview with the doctor who ran the place, Dr. Catherine Painter, who on record told me about, you know, yes, we cut the children's stomachs open if they're refusing. And she was, you know, quite pleased with all of this about adherence being very important. She sounds like a mentally ill Nazi to me if you listen back to the recordings. She just sounds absolutely bloody insane. She's disaffected. She's doesn't seem to be talking about human beings. Her language is incredibly cautious. Like, yes, well, in the case of adherence, we have to, you know, and it's creepy. And I got off the line with her, and I just wanted to, you know, puke a million times. But that was, I did that work. I did it in 2003, 2004, 2005. And that's the story.
That's a huge eye opener because, I mean, that was going on in New York City, which is like the mecca of these progressives that are supposed to be all loving and caring and dope smoking hippies that play kumbaya, you know?
There's no kumbaya in New York.
Disgusting.
New York is a rough city. No kumbayaing. It's not a loving city. It's a cold, distracted, disorganized, maddening place. It is Babylon. It's a granite island a few miles long with a few million people sleeping there every night and a few million coming into work. Everybody's on their little electronic devices. Nobody is where they are. There are kids living in the village in the Lower East Side who are essentially trust fund brats, you know, opening businesses on their father's dime or something, however long they last, having a laugh as they get out of college. And living in the shattered bones of the World Trade Center in the asbestos landscape. And I was there for a couple months, believe me. It's a mess. It's just a mess. And then up in the upper numbers, you have people living their isolated lives in the upper East and West Side with money. And then you get up into the real numbers in Harlem, in Washington Heights, and those are the people who can't afford to leave. And they become essentially victims of the state, victims of the city of New York. There's a reason why Law and Order was a, you know, was a good cop show, you know, for 20 years. It occurred in this microcosm. It occurred in a place that doesn't exist anywhere else. New York is a world unto itself. It has a, it's like that movie Dark City. It's a science fiction movie. Did you ever see that?
No.
I recommend it. I won't tell you much about it, but go watch Dark City, Alex Proyas. It's a very interesting science fiction movie, and New York is a lot like that. I think I even talked to a friend of mine who's from New York, and I said, we were talking about film, and he's like, yeah, I always think of the city when I think of that movie. And you'll see it. You'll see what I mean. It's a constrained, contained, it's Babylon. People think they can't live without it. I'm glad that, I guess that some people think that they love it. I wish they would ban cars from the city. I wish they would make it a walking city again. I wish they would make it a human-scaled city again. But right now, it's run by a medical mafia. They're worried, and I don't mind that they're worried about trans fats. It doesn't bother me that they don't want to sell 96-ounce sodas to children. That's not a problem. But they'll use children in NIH drug trials, and they'll kill them.
Are they still doing it?
Sure. You know, they'll say that they stopped using the orphanage, but they stopped using the orphanage, and they were still using the orphans, because the orphans are seen at 7 or 8 other hospitals in the city. So they can be enrolled anywhere. And the idea of a drug trial is more or less a myth. The drugs they use in the trials aren't really any different than the drugs they use regularly. They just use varying doses, and they say they're doing scientific work. But it's the same drugs. It's not that they have...
Right.
Yeah, they're still exposing them to extreme toxins. So the city pretended to investigate it. They spent $3 million on a group called the Vera Institute. And the Vera Institute was going to really put this to rest, because there had been protests, big protests coming out of Harlem, and you know, black power movements and you know, what are you doing to our children movements had gotten involved, and the city of New York had to put a hush on this. New York Times got involved and did a cover up of an article. I gave them all the information. They reported none of it, and they libeled me, but the city still had to investigate. So they investigated, or they let the Vera Institute investigate, and they on one condition, two conditions. Number one, they could not look at any medical records. No. I know you need to find out what happened, but no. You don't need to see any medical records. Number two, they couldn't take any information from anybody about what happened. So I, I went and I interviewed with a very goofy, disturbing woman called Ann Lifflander, and she wouldn't take from me the audio interviews that I had. She wouldn't take from me the data that I had. She wouldn't look at HIV test data. She wouldn't look at drug data. I don't know why she interviewed me. I gave her a disc. She returned it to me. She said she couldn't take it. It was against what they were allowed to do, and she ended the interview. I wrote the director of the program, and I said, your crazed reporter has ended the interview with me because I tried to give her data. He said, yes, that's right. We're not allowed to take any data about the kids involved, and we can't look at any medical records. But, you know, we would have been happy to hear about your feelings about everything. Your feelings. And that's what they were allowed to collect, feelings. They did manage to get a number of deaths recorded, though. So they recorded that 25 kids in trials died, 55 kids right after the trial died. And then they dropped this on the air on WBAI in New York that some 30% of the kids who had been involved in the trials were dead. They then said that it couldn't have been from the drug. It wasn't the drugs.
Because they were AIDS patients, right? It's the same story.
They
died of AIDS.
It doesn't matter. Yes. And as soon as you say that, people go, oh, AIDS.
Poor kids.
They died of the AIDS. It doesn't matter that we cut their stomachs open and poured in, you know, battery acid. That won't kill you.
This is just when I read this account of what happened in your book, it just blew my mind. I mean, I know I can fathom somewhat what this government is capable of doing, but my God, the way it was just done in such a cold, heartless manner, and it was babies. And then talking about the fact that the reason these kids got the tubes put into their stomach was because they knew what those drugs did, how it made them feel, and they were refusing it. So they cut a hole in their stomach and gave it to them anyways. I mean, my God, the humanity there and how somebody could be so cold. It was a perfect analogy, what you just said. It's Nazi Germany.
Oh, it's hell on earth. I mean, you're suddenly inside of like a Sartre. I mean, it's like no exit. Like you're in the worst place you can be. There is no door. These kids had no door. I was talking with mothers and caretakers and friends for years afterward. How do we get somebody out? How do we get somebody out? I mean, I watched them. Oh, well, so-and-so, they've cut a hole in her stomach. You know the kid's going to be dead in 2 months. And this girl was. Over and over again. Oh, well, she's refusing. Okay, tell her mother not to let them cut the hole in. Okay, well, her mother's folding. Her mother's afraid. They're scaring her mother, so they're going to cut the hole.
Ugh.
Yep.
My Lord. And then you've got just here recently, I mean, you've got all this, just basically legalized brown skin genocide here. You've got homosexual genocide. You've got everything going on perfectly legal within government limits and everything and of what they're capable of doing. And now in steps the OMSJ, who is sitting there and winning case after case because they're the ones that are finally going to court and saying, prove to me what HIV is. And many of these court cases are somebody who is supposedly HIV positive that's going out and around and having sex with multiple people, and then they're suing them. There's military cases where people have been arrested for having sexual intercourse without protection, being HIV positive. And OMSJ is actually out there just destroying government lawyers.
Yeah, the Office of Medical and Scientific Justice. You know, a few years ago, more than a few years ago, maybe 7 years ago at this point, when there's something like this, you know, the autism community, you know how there are fights within the autism community?
Oh, yeah.
You like, don't blame vaccines too much, some people will say, or no, it's clearly the vaccines, but don't say it in certain places because we won't get in. They're the same fights in the what's called the dissident community, AIDS dissidents. I just call them like not crazy people who understand that, you know, like the not totally crazy people. So the fights have been pretty ferocious, and I've definitely been involved in a few of them and taken and thrown a few. But I was very clear that their old model was to, well, there's proof that HIV isn't the cause of AIDS. Well, as soon as you say that, You give them the thing that the mainstream claims. They say, oh, well, you've just given them their HIV. You can't say there's an HIV. You can't say there's Dracula, but he's not going to bite you. Oh, they're vampires, but they're nice. And that's what was coming out of sort of AIDS rethinking for a long time. Oh, yeah, there's this virus, but it's harmless. No. There's not a virus. That's the point. They drum up a lot of cellular crap in people who have a lot of reasons to be sick. So I don't give the mainstream that allowance. I don't, you know, like in the autism community, there are people who probably say, well, it's multifactorial. Well, look, the major factor is injecting children with poison. Let's be clear. Right. So the major factor in real AIDS, not the HIV, but in real AIDS was injecting people with poison. I mean, it was putting it into their guts, gut bombing them. And in the gay community through the colon, putting a lot of poisons in the colon and stripping it. But there was a fight in the dissident community about that. And I said, look, please stop trying to prove that something does or does not cause anything. Firstly, you can't prove or disprove a negative.
Right.
It's a logical impossibility. You can't prove that kittens don't secretly run the world, hypnotizing us with their charm and making us forget that they're pulling the strings of power. Can't prove it. Can't disprove it. Don't bite onto a logical fallacy. And I actually had an argument. I had a number of huge arguments with people in the dissident community. I said, just shut up about that, this, that, the other things. Just focus on the tests. And I wasn't the first person to say focus on the tests, but I was saying it very, very loudly to a lot of people. And I said, focus on the tests. Well, after a few years of me saying this, and not just me, but me very loudly, you know, a couple people said, hey, look at this. These tests suck. We can disprove them in court. And they did work that I never could have done. You know, OMSJ has done stuff that I never, ever myself could have done. I knew and other people knew, Dave Raznick knew from the start, where the weak point was. It was the tests. But OMSJ under Clark Baker went in and has taken people who have been accused of spreading HIV based on the fact that they're HIV positive to court, impeached the experts and said, how do you prove again that they're HIV positive? Your test has no standards. There's no reasonable point at which you can say somebody's positive or negative because the test comes up positive for everything. you run three of the same test and say that three of a piece of crap is more accurate than one piece of crap, and the judge says, out, this right. test does not stand. And so they've won, I don't know, they've gotten something like 30 in like 4 years, or 3 years, something like that, 40 cases just dismissed, all charges dropped, and 10 cases with sort of amended charges that were really... One person who was accused of spreading HIV got 5 days of unsupervised probation. That's because these tests suck. They don't really test for anything, and the mainstream knows that. So, you know, kudos. Huge plaudits and praise to the OMSJ and what they're doing. And if you are somebody who's been accused of being HIV positive, you have been falsely accused of being HIV positive, and you have to know that. You got to do the research. You got to figure out the worst thing they do to these people is that they forbid them normal medical care. Once they give you this designation, the only thing they try to do in hospitals is to kill you. And I'm not kidding. They will do everything they can to kill you. They say you need the most poisonous drugs in the world. You say, I have a yeast infection. You need the most poisonous drugs in the world. I have a bruise that's not healing. You need the most poisonous chemotherapy drugs in the world. I don't want them. You're an AIDS denialist. So my goal is to help create a community of people who say, we don't accept this designation. Everybody deserves the standard of care that they really want to have. And if they don't want to be murdered, that's honestly their right.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we only have a couple of minutes left. I do want to talk about what is in Liam Sheff's future. I'm going to tell you what, I posted on my Facebook page the Building 7 Liam in 3 edition on YouTube. Let's talk about that real quick, because that was hilarious, but let's talk about what you're doing.
Yeah, well, I've decided that going absolutely broke, ripping your heart out and bearing your soul so hopefully the world will pay attention to terrible things that are going on is not a lifelong calling. It's not something you can do forever without totally losing your mind or again, becoming destitute. So I've leaned on my other favored talents, the stuff that I really enjoyed in school. Number one, sort of being a clown, being funny or amusing, and being a cut up. And number two, I love the truth, but the truth is always funnier when truth is always better when it's funny. So I've decided that to mainstream the truth about vaccines, the truth about HIV tests, the truth about 9/11, the truth about governments is to accept that we know it and to do it like Johnny Carson used to do to the Tonight Show. It was just a fact that you could make fun of certain things. You'd make fun of certain things. So we're going to make fun of certain things. And I'm starting a show, and I'm starting with Liam in 3, which is a three and a half minute segment that's going up about 4 times a week on YouTube. You can watch it on your cell phone. You can watch it on a bathroom break. It's short enough. And they're just funny bits about me. Like in this one, I'm taking the part of the reporter who reported that the Building 7 had fallen when it hadn't, and I'm just cutting myself into the video. Other times I talk about, you know, vaccines, and I just talk about the reality of injecting people with all this stuff, and I make a number of strange jokes, and I have kind of a comedic personality, and so it just – that's what I'm up to, and I'm going to be having guests. I think the future is knowing that we can't change the mainstream. We're building a separate group. And I'm here to sort of be funny for them and be a clown for them. We're not – the mainstream is not here for us. We have to be here for us. That's my message. We don't have to wait. We are the change in the world. You know, we are
– right.
He was right. We're the change that we want to see in the world. Not them. Us. We're not – I'm not waiting for Washington to get it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, we can't. And I can fully attest to the fact that sitting here screaming and talking like I have to do on a daily basis gets tiring, and there's not a lot of money in it. I'm loving what you're doing with the YouTube thing. I absolutely am. You've got another edition of official stories coming out as far as a revised edition and what have you. I'm looking forward to that. Unfortunately, I wanted to ask what your next step is. What's the conspiracy realist out there doing? And if you could talk about it real briefly, what are you looking at? What's your next conspiracy that you want to expose?
Oh, no, I want to be there for other people at this point. I want to do a show that lets you and everybody who's got something important to say come on and have a laugh. I don't want it all to be bloody tears. I want to have a laugh at this crazy stuff because I want us to be building a good thing. So I'm turning my attention to being there for others. I'm doing writing projects, but a lot of it's going in sort of the more entertainment vein. I just want to be there for others as I build. I've sort of done my, you know, my red and tooth and claw stuff. I'm not sure I have the stomach for it anymore, but I do want to be there for others to tell the truth, but to do it with a smile, to do it while laughing, to do it while retaining our humanity.
Well, that's great. Liam, I want to thank you for being on the program today. It's always a pleasure.
Kurt, it's wonderful. You're a great host. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Have a great one.